Good afternoon, everyone. It's Sunday the 25th of January, and I want to join in on the discussion about the future after listening to Paul and Claire talking about what they thought the future would hold when they were growing up. They started off talking about technology. Now, to be honest, I haven't a clue how I thought the future would be with regards to technology. I know we used to watch Tomorrow's World, and I suppose some of the things on there must have happened. they must have come to fruition. Oh, God. Guess who? As soon as I start talking, she thinks I'm talking to her. So I'm sure some of the things from Tomorrow's World... I think the only reason we watched it was... I can't remember, was it before or after Top of the Pops? And I can remember the music. I can hear it in my head. Don't worry, I'm not going to sing it. Okay. Yeah, well, you got it. So I think the only thing I can remember people saying... I'm not going to get anywhere with this. Sit down now. That's it. When I was very small, I'm sure one day you'll get your sight back. That's what people used to say. By the time you grow up, you know, when you're older, there'll be a cure. People would say stuff like that. I never took any notice of it because I didn't believe it. Because I suppose when they said it to me at the time, I had reasonable sight. It wasn't good compared with a sighted person, but for me, I hadn't really realised the implications of it at that point. Because I could see, I could recognise people. I couldn't read print properly, not unless the letters were big. But when I did try and read it, they kind of mingled together because I've got a bit of nystagmus, which is a secondary condition. So that doesn't allow the eye. It didn't allow my eyes to focus on the letters properly. They would become a blur. And I wore glasses, which magnified things. And I got around okay. I could see to get around. I could see people's faces. If they were near me, I could recognise them. I could look at pictures in books and see them pretty clearly. So when people said that to me, it didn't mean anything to me because I didn't have any concept that I was much different to anybody else. Because my mum used to say, well, there's something wrong with your eyes. This is when I was about 4 or 5. And she used to say, you can't see as well as everybody else. And I used to say, but what did I used to say to her? But it's only a little bit worse than everyone else's. And she said, used to say, oh, yes, it's only a little bit. Well, actually, it was a lot worse than everybody else's. But so I grew up thinking that I wasn't that different. And then, of course, I went to a blind school, a school for the blind, when I was coming up for 8. And I carried on through my education at the school for the blind. And then I went to university, and just before I left secondary school, when I was 17, we went to Moorfields in pairs on different days, you know, for genetic counselling, and they told me the cause of my poor sight, which no one had ever done, because my parents didn't even know, you know, they were never told exactly what it was. So I was told for the first time, and then I was able to tell my mother. I was also told that the genes were recessive, so it had to be carried on both sides. But because my parents were obviously both carriers, they had a 1 in 4 chance of having another child with eyesight problems. But they weren't told that at the time. Maybe they didn't know back then. My sister's got full sight, and I'm the only one with a visual impairment in my whole family that we know of, certainly in this generation, the last generation, and the next generation. They told me at that point that my sight wouldn't get any worse, and it did. So I haven't got any now. But anyway, that's not really what I'm here to talk about, but that's, you know, by the time my sight went, I'd forgotten. I hadn't really thought anything about cures. They did tell me at one point, I was told that if there was ever a cure for my eyesight, it would be a very, very big operation. Now, advances in technology have obviously moved on in leaps and bounds since that point, and I think some people, I know they did it on a dog in America, and they've also done it on people. I don't think it's like mainstream. I don't know if it's widely available in this country. I don't think it is, and I don't even know if it is in the States, but some people had stem cell treatment for my eye condition, and I think it was pretty successful. And it probably wasn't a horrific operation like they told me it would. I think they had ideas that it's something to do with my nerve didn't develop properly. And I think at the time when I was told this, they had visions of your head having to open up your whole head to get to the back of your eye, and, you know, things just aren't like that now. So that was the only thing I can remember people talking about in the future. I don't remember people talking about driverless cars, or no one could predict the internet, really, could they? I don't think. I never remember anything like that. But talking about my own personal future, my ambition as a child, excuse this cat. My ambition as a child was to be a teacher. I had my heart set on it. You know, I wanted to be a teacher, and that was it. I didn't end up being a teacher. When I got to my like teenage years, I wanted to go and do some kind of work abroad. That was when I was like about 13 or 14. I think I probably would have changed my mind. I would have loved to have worked somewhere like Africa or India, or maybe being a teacher there. That's what I had in mind, I think, when I got to my teenage years. I would have loved to have done something like that, or working in a developing country. But obviously my eyesight wouldn't, you know, allow such a thing. And, you know, I went to university, and my life took a completely different turn, because I didn't really want to carry on with my education. I didn't want to do further teacher training, and I don't know, I just didn't feel confident that I could keep a class of kids interested. And I think because of my sight deterioration, which obviously I hadn't predicted as a child, because I didn't, you know, I was thinking of myself being able to get around, see and see what they're doing, and I thought it would be too difficult. And of course, there would have been probably maybe a possibility of teaching at a school for the blind, but I mean, they've pretty much all gone now anyway. And of course, due to the very nature of the profession, and the number of teachers needed for that kind of work, there's not very often an opening for a new teacher, really. So that kind of went out the window. So I went into the secretarial field, which I didn't enjoy particularly. I found it quite boring, you know, did shorthand, taking minutes of meetings, arranging appointments and all that stuff. When I was a child, my sister and I were mad on dolls and babies. You know, we wanted my mum, we begged my mum to have a baby. We wanted a baby, and I remember the time she told us she's not having any more, and we were, I think she always knew she wouldn't be having any more, because she was really ill with toxemia when she had my sister, who's 2 years younger than me, and she was advised by her GP not to have any more children. I wasn't warned by my GP or anybody not to have any more kids, but I had the same thing with my second, well, actually it was my third pregnancy, because the second one didn't last, but the third one, I had the same thing. I don't think I was as ill as she was, but I was pretty unwell at the end, with high blood pressure and protein in my urine and stuff. But when I was a child, you know, we wanted a baby, and we wanted to have kids when we grew up. And then again, when I got to my like 11 or 12, I had lots of younger cousins and babies and stuff, and began to find them actually quite annoying. My sister was good with them and I wasn't really. I just felt that I couldn't communicate with them because I didn't know what they wanted when I couldn't see so well. You know, they would point at things and I thought, oh dear, I don't think I want any kids after all. Actually, I don't think I could cope with any. And then, of course, you know, I went to an all-girls school, the secondary school, and there was about 10 to 12 of us in a year at any one time, usually. And I thought, I wonder if I imagine myself never getting married and never having kids. I don't know why, but it's not what I wanted, but I just imagined, you know, maybe no one would want to marry me. And I don't know, just that's how I felt, I suppose. And the funny thing is, you know, the people that I thought would be the ones, as a couple that I thought would really, you know, make good mums and have kids, never had kids. In fact, one of my friends who I thought would make a really nice mum, she's never even had a boyfriend, as far as I know. She's older than me. So I never thought I would have... I never really seriously thought I would have kids. And then I got into a relationship with someone who didn't want kids. He was another blind person. It was a serious relationship. You know, we nearly split up over it, actually. We did split up for a while, for about 6 months. Because, you know, because we couldn't... You know, he didn't think two blind people could bring up a child. And I think he was influenced by his family. His family kind of thought that. But my mum had a talk with him. She said, look, you know... She kind of told him he was being... I mean, he wasn't really being selfish. He was genuinely concerned, I think. She just said, look, you know, it's a natural thing to want children. You know, other people have brought... Other blind people have brought up kids. You're not going to be the first... you're both intelligent people. You know, there's plenty of sighted people out there that have got no brains and have kids. And, you know, so it kind of changed his mind, and so we did have them. I suppose I thought we'd always be together. But then, as the kids grew up, I realised that was not what I wanted. I didn't think we got on sufficiently well at that point to envisage a life once the kids had grown up and left home of just me and him. It really, really, really scared me. And that's when I took steps to end the marriage, which I hadn't envisaged at all. And my future really hasn't turned out at all how I imagined it. I did end up teaching for a while, for about 5 or 6 years at my local education college, adult education college. I taught VI people basic computer skills and helped them get through exams and stuff. You know, the quite basic exams. I can't remember what they were called. ECDL, was it? European Computer Driving License. Stuff like that. There were different modules of word processing, email and internet, Excel, there were 5 altogether and I can't even remember what the others were. Web pages, one of them, or that was something different, I think. I did do a web page course, but, and I did enjoy that, but the problem with that was that I, and it was paid work, it was only part-time, but the problem with it was that when they first opened the unit, there were 2. There was one in Orpington, there's another one in around Beckenham Way. And they're like satellite centres from the main college, which is in Bromley. It's Bromley College, Bromley Adult Education College, as opposed to Bromley College, which is mainly for teenagers and stuff. There were a lot of people on the waiting list for these courses. And the trouble was, a lot of them were elderly people that were starting to lose their sight, so they didn't use speech. They were using the magnification part of the software, so I couldn't really help them with that. There was talk about me training to be a, I didn't call them professors, what were they called? A tutor. I was a classroom assistant, support assistant. In which case, I could have probably done it with a classroom support assistant who could see. But then my marriage breakup came, and the other thing that happened was I used to teach people that used the speech. And because there were two centres open, they all came through, and then there was kind of not the work anymore, because initially there'd been a lot of people on the waiting list because it was a new thing, but once they'd all gone through, you tended to find that that generation were the ones that, like my generation and a bit younger, that hadn't been taught computer skills at school, but the younger ones coming through had, so they didn't need these courses. So I don't even know if they still run. The last time I spoke to somebody, one of the centres had all but closed down, which is a real shame. That was the one where I used to work. So I did end up doing a bit of teaching, and I actually really enjoyed it. It was very, very rewarding to get people through their exams and, you know, to see them progress. I really enjoyed that, and, you know, I think I did a reasonable job. You know, they were pleased with me. I had to have proper reviews and everything, you know, like you do at work. And someone had to come and watch me teaching, and so I did kind of fulfil that. You know, I did end up doing some teaching. It wasn't as I had imagined. I imagined teaching children, but I did teach, and I had kids, and I was married. I've been married twice. So, first to a man who with no sight, and now to someone who's sighted, and who's from overseas. And I certainly would not have envisaged that. That would definitely have been a real surprise. If someone had told me, like, I don't know, 20, 25 years ago, one day you'll be married to an African, I would have laughed and said, I don't think so. Yeah, but here I am, happily married to one. And life isn't easy now at the moment, because obviously I had something completely unexpected, and sometimes I think, why did this happen to me? But of course I've got end-stage chronic kidney disease, which isn't fun, and sometimes the future is a bit scary. But my aim is, you know, if I'm looking ahead to the future, my aim is to still be alive in 10 years' time and to have had a kidney transplant, hopefully. I must admit, the thought of it is quite scary, that you have to go through a real lot of stuff. I've been through most of the tests. I've got one more to do, which they haven't sent me an appointment for. And I must admit that I'm not always as proactive as I should be. You know, I should be ringing them up saying, where's this test? Bring it on, bring it on. And I'm just quite happy to sit here doing my dialysis, feeling like crap some days, waiting for them to send me the letter, or waiting for my next appointment so I can ask them what's happened to this other test, which I will do. Because part of me is scared to take the step, and that is... it is scary, believe me, but not taking it is even scarier. So my future has turned out vastly different from how I had envisaged it. I kind of imagined myself being a teacher, having no kids. What a boring life that would have been, eh? I suppose if you're a teacher, you get plenty of kids every day, and you might be sick of them by the end of the day. But and I did some. I did a lot of voluntary work at my kids' school. My younger one in the last probably 2 or 3 years of his primary school education. I used to go in every morning for about 20 minutes, half an hour. They had this scheme where parents were encouraged to come in and read with the kids. Well, I never read with Ronan because his reading was good. He didn't need any extra help. Or sometimes I did read with him, but obviously I did all that at home. But I was one, really, my friend and I, her daughter was in a different class, she was slightly younger.
but we were the only ones that would religiously stay every day. Most parents, some parents were working, but a lot weren't. They just couldn't be bothered, really. And it was actually very sad to see kids of 8 and 9 who couldn't spell the word cat. And I'm not exaggerating. When I'd sit down with them and they'd spell, and I'd say, I'd help them, encourage them to sound out the word, and they'd be going, K. And I'd say, yeah, K-at. And I'd say, well, what does that sound like? I say it, K-at, cat. And they'd get it. But, you know, it's very sad to think that kids that age actually don't know these things. I know parents are busy, but, you know, there's... I don't know whether it's because they're working, they're sick, they don't care. I suppose it's a mixture of all of them. They've got so many kids that they haven't got time. But some of these kids really struggled. And it was mostly boys, but not all boys. I can remember a couple of boys. You know, I'd sit on a certain table, the ones that... Well, they weren't always the ones that struggled, because they didn't always put them together for reading, because sometimes they would lack concentration, they would mess around. But I'd have, like, a table of about 6 kids, and then I would go around and read a little bit with each one. And, you know, I used to feel so happy when I could see, you know, like, over a period of months, their improvement, you know, because... And I know it wasn't all down to me, but the fact that it's just they had someone just to sit and take a bit of time with them and encourage them, and it made their confidence grow in leaps and bounds. And, you know, I can remember one particular little boy. I don't suppose it matters if I say his name. I won't say his surname, but his name was Shane. And he was a very fidgety child, you know. He couldn't really settle and... couldn't sound out any words, and, you know, he was like a, when it came to reading, he was like a baby. But by the time, I don't know, 6 months had gone by, I could see such a difference. He was reading, he was enjoying it, and it's just because we spent that little time every day of the week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, we'd spend that day just for 15, 20, 25 minutes. You know, we would go in at 10 to 9, and then it was still about 9:15, I think, because sometimes they had assembly, they didn't have it every day, but, you know, till about 9:15, we'd just sit there and listen to them read, just a little bit. And, you know, it made all the difference. So I did get my little bit of, you know, classroom stuff. And actually, when Connor was in the nursery, when he first started nursery, I used to take books in and read to the kids, because I had lots of books that were brailled. So I did get that. So I suppose some of the things I thought I'd be doing, I did do, and some things I hadn't expected, I did too. You know, like getting married twice, having kids. So I suppose it's been mixed and a bit patchy, really. But I try and keep positive every day. For the future, because, you know, as I think it was Claire said, you know, it's pointless. Nothing good can come of not being positive. And it's totally pointless. It's not always easy, but, you know, sometimes you think, oh, why did this have to happen to me? It's bad enough. You know, not that I'm feeling sorry for myself, but, you know, I'm already blind. Why do I have to get a double dose of this crap? And then I think, oh, well, you know, what can I do about it? It's happened, you know. There's nothing with either thing. There's nothing I could have done to have prevented it, you know. Nothing I could have done would have stopped me being blind, and nothing I could have done could have stopped me having kidney disease. I didn't do anything to warrant it, you know. I didn't do anything. These cats are bugging me. That's Candice. What are you doing in here? So yeah, that's, I don't think I ever really predicted the future in a big way, but my future did turn out, as I say, quite differently in some ways, but than I had thought it would. But in other ways, I suppose, in a subtle way, some of the things I'd wanted to do got slipped in, like the reading in the classroom and the teaching of the adults. It wasn't, I didn't have a whole career of teaching all my life, but I did a bit here and there, a little bit of, well, it wasn't exactly teaching, well, support work, I suppose, which I did really enjoy. And I think probably that suited me better than, you know, being in charge of a whole class of screaming, unruly kids, to be honest. I was, you know, more of a friend to them, in a way, and not someone in real authority. Obviously, they didn't mess me about, you know, they didn't take advantage because I couldn't see at all. I never had that from any of them that I can remember. They were always very respectful. And I think it probably helped because they saw me around the school a lot with the dog. And, you know, even when they were little, Connor was in the older years then, and they probably saw me around then. They grew up seeing me everywhere. You know, in fact, sometimes if I'm walking around now, I still hear people say, "That's Ronan's mum." My reputation goes before me. Anyway, I think that's about all, and I'll speak to you all soon. Bye for now. Low battery. Dismiss. Also record. Right, okay, oops. Pause recording. The cats are still caterwauling. Candice's.